My next guest helps people to let go of their anxiety, stress and depression. How? Let's find out. Pauline McKinnon has been treating people for 30 years with something called stillness meditation therapy. She runs a therapy centre in Melbourne and has recently put out a book called Living Calm in a Busy World. And she's in the far north on holidays and has popped in for a chat. Good morning.
Good morning, Fiona.
Thank you for driving down the beautiful Captain Cook Highway from Port Douglas.
It was a lovely drive. We did get up early, but it was great.
It is a magic drive looking out on the ocean. Beautiful. Calming, I'd imagine.
Very calming. And it was semi-dark as we drove, and we could just, the sun was rising, and it was just a beautiful experience.
Take us back to when you were a young mother, Pauline, because you yourself used to suffer with dreadful anxiety.
I did. That's right.
Tell us a bit about that.
All right, so in the early years of married life, we had quite a lot of stressful events happen between us. Lots of things, moving house, changing direction. My husband changed direction in his employment, or he started a business, went back to study, all that kind of thing. And then I became pregnant, and then my father dropped dead. And then a month later, my husband's father dropped dead. Mm. And we just had a series of deaths and illnesses and challenges over a long period of time. And then I had another baby. And I think after that, just the tension and the sort of the high rise of activity in my life, and still adjusting, I suppose, to married life, meant that I had one day a dreadful panic attack out in the car with the two little kids, which really shocked me and left me very debilitated for quite a few weeks. And then the result of that was that the anxiety symptoms kept lingering. And so to kind of protect myself from those feelings, I started to withdraw more and more into the home. So I developed what we know as agoraphobia, the fear of leaving the safety of home, meaning that every time we venture out, when we're anxious to that level, we'll start to get replica symptoms of what we already experienced. So that sends us rushing back home again, and so on and so on. So it was a very difficult 8 years. Difficult for me, but difficult for Don and the kids.
Because you had little children.
Well, we had two, and then we had three, and then we had four within that period of time. And I still look back sometimes and wonder, how I managed all that, or how we all managed all that. But life goes on, and you get around things. And, of course, I sought all sorts of help, doctors, psychiatrists, counsellors, all sorts of different treatments, but nothing made any difference to the symptoms.
What was it then that did make the difference for you?
Okay, well, it was meeting Dr. Ainsley Mears in Melbourne, and he was a psychiatrist with a difference, a man who believed that people had the power within themselves to relieve these symptoms, providing they learned the right technique. And his particular technique was a style of meditation, but very different to classical meditation or today's mindfulness meditation. Very different style of meditation, and really very therapeutic, and very much an empowerment, a personal empowerment.
And this was what he called the stillness meditation therapy?
That's right. In those years, he called it relaxing mental exercises, and then he sort of moved closer to calling it meditation, because we're talking about the early 70s through the 70s into the 80s, and he died in 1986. By that time, I'd published my success story with his blessing, and he invited me to teach other people. And then, of course, he died, so I've been maintaining his work. And as time has moved on, I've modified the description so that it distinguishes itself from other styles of meditation.
So what is it? What happens with stillness meditation therapy?
All right, so the difference mainly is that this is all about doing absolutely nothing, learning to be still but to do nothing. Most styles of meditation involve a mantra, perhaps, or listening to music, or maybe a guided meditation, or visualization, or breathing techniques, lots of different tools. And they can all be very, very good. But what Mears believed was that to heal this level of anxiety, we need to give the brain a rest. It's already overloaded with too much stimulus. So we need to really let it rest in almost a state of dormancy, just a really just being still, not putting in any more information or guidance, but just simply total rest. Okay. So the body gets a rest and the brain gets a rest and things start to change.
So if I was to start this, I mean, what would I do? Just, go into a quiet room and sit comfortably and that's it?
Well, ideally you'd come to see me in Melbourne. Well, I've made the trip from Port Douglas. I'm sure you can come to Melbourne. Ideally, it's a facilitated experience, okay. But obviously a lot of people can't do that. And so, yes, I have an audio tape and an audio CD and the book, of course, which help people. But the idea is to do nothing, to sit in a particular way, not too comfortably, and to just allow ourselves to experience just mental calm. Okay. So without me taking you through a demonstration right now, it's a little bit hard to tell you. But
that's it.
That's
in
the
nutshell.
Principle of it, yes. Okay. That's right.
I'm speaking with Pauline McKinnon. We're talking about getting over or letting go of anxiety and stress. If someone is, you know, has a particular level of anxiety, let's say, and they do think, okay, I'll give this a go. I mean, what sort of time frame are we talking about for someone to, you know, move from a very anxious state to, you know, being able to let it go and then live a fairly normal kind of life?
Yes, it's difficult to quantify a time frame because everybody is in a different place in life,
sure.
As we know. Some people move in that direction really, really quickly. Others, especially if there's really high anxiety, take a lot longer and need perhaps a lot more guidance in the sense of how that they're doing it is correct, or maybe reassurance and so forth. And I spend quite a bit of time on email or Skype, you know, discussing these sorts of things with people. It's hard to let go at first when you're very, very anxious, but that's the secret. Once we can cross that threshold and actually feel confident enough to let go physically and mentally and emotionally and even spiritually, if you like, then we start to gain a calm control over the situation. It's when we keep running away and holding on that we reignite the fear constantly.
So you'd use this technique whenever you feel the anxiety rising, wherever you are?
Yes, up to a point, but better still to do it on a regular basis, right. First to bring the anxiety levels down. And then, of course, when the anxiety levels are lower, we're not going to experience the symptoms. So it's a bit of a chicken and egg situation, yes. And sometimes takes a little bit of explaining or guidance.
Yeah, I was just thinking, talking about the chicken and egg situation, it's often hard to find the time to sit quietly, isn't it, to try and, you know, let go of those kind
well,
of
it
feelings.
Well, it is. Oh, one of my latest little sayings, I suppose, is that, you know, dental care has become a very significant thing in our community. We all, you know, emphasise that we must look after our teeth, and certainly we would clean our teeth once or twice a day at least, you know, maybe more. So, you know, if we can find time to look after the dental care, what about the mental care? You know, surely 5 minutes, 10 minutes at the most, you know, morning and evening isn't an unreasonable thing if we really want to make a change.
Pauline, I'm sure you'd be aware of some of the things that have happened in Far North Queensland in the last year with cyclones and dreadful severe weather events. And also we have a, you know, high unemployment rate as well. People are very anxious about those sorts of things. How important is it that people, you know, who are very worried about that sort of thing seek help?
I think it's very important because I think what happens is that people, even if they're not highly anxious, people lose confidence in life, really, and can become anxious or depressed or sad or miserable or lonely or, you know, in whichever category we might like to place that. But there's no doubt that the changes that take place in the brain when we really give it this rest will elevate those moods and will change direction and will strengthen immunity and just add to the quality of life.
And this style of meditation is good for also for stress and depression?
Oh, definitely. You know, I see amazing changes in people's lives, really, providing they commit to it and hang in there for a while until they see the results. And, you know, our website has some really great testimonials on it, and I think that's encouraging for people too.
Is it a mistake that a lot of people think, you know, they can just solve their issues by chatting to a loved one? I mean, that might be a good first step, but that they do need to take that extra step.
Well, I think chatting to a loved one is very important, but it's often quite difficult too, because sometimes the people closest to us can be the most complex in terms of, you know, our own interchange of emotional issues. And also life gets very busy, as we know, and so we get caught up in the day-to-day stuff when we're with those close to us. So sometimes, you know, that isn't sufficient. And this is where counselling and psychotherapy and that kind of thing comes into play as well. Because often we do need to understand underlying issues. But often in understanding, those horrible symptoms don't actually disappear. We might learn a lot about ourselves, but we can't always become free of the symptoms. And it's the symptoms that keep people trapped.
Mm. For yourself, I mean, it's been many years since you were that young mum suffering from that shocking level of anxiety. But yes. Do you still need to keep it in check by, you know, having that daily dose of meditation?
I don't know whether the word need is right or not, because I just do it as often as I possibly can. I think in teaching it, one has to maintain one's own meditation, because there's no point in trying to teach people to be calm if you're not calm yourself. So it's become so much a part of my life, without being a burden, that I think it's just the way I live. And that's what I mean really by the title of this new book, because we learn eventually to live the calm, and that's the very important thing. Then stressful things can happen, but because the overall anxiety levels are lower, the stressful events don't have the same impact. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep, I think so. Now, you're the Vice President of the Australian Teachers of Meditation Association. That's a fairly new organisation, I think.
Yes, very much so. With Dr. Ian Gawler and Dr. Craig Hassard, the three of us got together from about 2006, and we spent 3 years planning, and in 2009 we became incorporated, and so ATMA is really up and running now. And the goal of ATMA really is to become the recognised peak body for meditation teaching in Australia and perhaps beyond, because there has been nowhere for the public to really source information, I think, and for all these years. And also, meditation, like many things that are new therapies, meditation has been sitting a little bit on the back burner. But now, of course, there's so much recognition of meditation as a healing modality that it's important that it starts to gain recognition, because it's something natural and something a way people can help themselves as well.
Pauline, as someone who treats people in a clinic with anxiety, with stress, with depression, do you see the levels are rising particularly with anxiety? Are we more anxious now than we perhaps were a generation ago?
Well, I think definitely so, because there are more pressures in life. I mean, we've got wonderful facilities in life today, but it also keeps the brain highly busy. And I think this is the problem, you know, coming back to Ainsley Mears' theory, that anxiety levels rise when the brain can't get a rest from this constant stimulation. And it does concern me, and this is why I've also worked a lot with children and sort of innovated that idea back in the 90s, because I think if we can teach children to get that balance, so yes, we can be really, really busy mentally, but yes, we also need to give the brain a rest, that's pretty productive, really.
Mm. That can be a controversial issue with children. Do we label their bad behaviour, or is there an underlying mental health issue that needs to be medicated?
I don't like the idea of medicating young children at all. You know, I think it's dreadful, because it's hard enough to manage medication as an adult who can reason it all out. But at the same time, of course, children can be in that situation where, and parents just don't know what to do with them. But again, we've had a lot of success in the classrooms and with individual kids and their families, just helping them to slow down a bit. And also helping them to express, you know, what's underlying, because once you slow down and give the brain a rest, often the issues will surface too.